You won.
Cisgendered individuals, please start your engines if you are privileged enough to have an engine. And may the best cisgendered individual entertainer win. Is that okay?
I don't really know how I feel about the term win. You know what? This is my motherfucking show, and I'm gonna say whatever the motherfuck I want. Okay? So how do you like this motherfucker?
Rebecca Giroux Show. Thanks for tuning in. We have a huge show tonight. Now, of course, what you just heard, that was a clip taken from the Drag Race 76 video that was posted at Huffington Post Gay Voices yesterday. The editor who posted it, I'm not quite sure which individual editor posted it, called it hilarious. Yeah. Basically, we're going to get into this a little bit later with Noah Michelson, who is the senior editor at Huffington Post. Post Gay Voices. He is my editor at there, the guy, my contact, the guy who I talk to when, and he's a personal friend. So, you know, I'm just full disclosure there. I've been writing for Gay Voices for about a couple of years now. I'm not going to get into my opinions. We'll save that for after Noah. But this is a big issue because it, the hate. I'm intentionally trying to check myself here because I don't want to get into it until after we hear what Noah had to say, because it was really quite good. We spoke to him earlier today. What he said was really quite good and encouraging, and I want to play that interview before I give you my full opinion. So, moving on for now. Let's see. We'll start with one thing that I did last night, and I want to let you know because it does impact the show. I went into New York to Barnard College, which is part of Columbia University, uptown in Manhattan yesterday, and I saw Janet Mock speak, and Laverne Cox was there in the audience. I got the chance to meet her. Also, CeCe McDonald, who, of course, as you may know, was a trans woman in Minnesota who was, frankly, horribly mistreated by the Minnesota legal system, was thrown in jail with men. Basically for defending herself from a transphobic hate crime. And so I got to meet her and talk to her for a few minutes. I got to talk to Janet for a few minutes. And I am very happy to be able to announce on the show tonight that I believe, and this is going to take a little arranging and scheduling and things. It's not going to happen immediately, but we're working on it. We're going to have all three of those people, Janet Mock, Laverne Cox, and CeCe McDonald, are going to be on the show. Okay, we're planning. Spoke to Laverne, asked her to come on the show last night. She's a very nice lady. Asked me to get in contact with her publicist, which I am going to do. And Janet, I expect probably late May, early June. That's when she told me she'll probably, her schedule will lessen a little bit. We'll be able to schedule her. And CeCe, we're working on that through GLAAD. Danny, I forget her last name, but Danny there is helping us with that. So we're going to get that done. As soon as I know what the scheduling is, as soon as I confirm stuff, I will let you know. But I can confirm that next week on the show, we're going to have somebody who I've wanted to have on this show for a long time. He was on the show a long time ago, years ago. But we haven't had him on in a while, and I've been wanting to interview this guy for a long time. Diego Sanchez, who worked for Barney Frank, is the highest-ranking transgender person on Capitol Hill, maybe even to this day. I'm not quite sure, but he knows so much. I mean, here is the trans man who is literally seen, you know, how ENDA plays out and how the politics of transgender politics plays out on Capitol Hill. And that is so valuable because that is a place where our access is so limited. I mean, yeah, you can go into an office and lobby, but But, you know, how much impact does that really have? This guy has seen it from the inside. We are going to have him on the show next week. He is awesome. He's working for PFLAG now. So we're also going to talk a little bit about PFLAG. Because PFLAG, the interesting thing about PFLAG is everybody knows who they are. But if you ask somebody, say, well, what do they do for trans folks? What programs? People will go, nobody. I mean, it's not like they don't do it. It's just that people don't know. So we're going to ask them a little bit about that. We're going to ask them, you know, what kind of services and those kind of things. What are those things that, you know, trans people should know about PFLAG and about the organization that they can, you know, that they do. Anyway, so Diego Sanchez next week. We got CC McDonald. We got Laverne Cox. We got Janet Mock. Amazing people, and you know they're all terrific. I mean, they're really genuinely nice people. You know, and that's the great thing, is you know I don't know. Maybe it's because they're trans and they came up through the trans community and they all have we all have a story. You know. Everybody's got a story. Laverne has a story. Janet obviously has a story, a New York Times bestselling story. But, you know, and of course, Cece has a very welcome. I mean, everybody has a story. So, you know, maybe it's because of that. But these folks, I mean, I met them. And, you know, Laverne is such a huge star. And she's very down to earth. I mean, I talked to her for a couple of minutes. She was very sweet, very nice. You know, and you know, you don't know. You don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, you don't know when you meet somebody like that for the first time. Well, yeah, you know, you don't know what kind of a, you know, if they're a nice person or if they're just, you know, a little too full of themselves. Laverne was none of that. She was just very down to earth, walked right over to her. Hi, I'm, you know, introduced myself. Very cool person. And same thing with Cece as well. Very cool person. I approached her, and in fact, what's interesting is they were, as you may know, Laverne Cox is producing a documentary about Cece, and they were filming at this thing, and I wound up getting on film with Cece having a conversation, and after that, they asked me if I would allow them to use the footage. I said, sure, absolutely, no problem. So, you know, now I don't know if they're actually going to use it, but they did record it, and they stuck a camera in my face and said, you're okay with us using this? I said, absolutely, not a problem. Why not? I'll take a little bit of self-promotion. What the hell? And that reminds me. There was something else I wanted to talk about today. We do have our opening rant. I'm intentionally not getting worked up about the big issues right now because we're going to be taking those on a little later. But, you know, I don't know. You may notice that I've been doing a lot of self-promotion over the last couple of weeks. You've been seeing me. I'm all over Facebook. I'm all over Twitter. I'm all over the Huffington Post. I'm all over The Advocate. I'm all over the Blerico Project. You know, I've been really pumping it out over the last few weeks. And I want to talk about a little bit about why. You know, I don't go out of my way to spam anybody. I try very carefully not to be a pain in the ass about this kind of thing. And yes, I try to dance on the line between aggressive self-promotion and being an asshole spammer, if you know what I mean. And because here's the thing, and I'm going to be honest with you guys. The reason why I'm doing this, I created a show page. I've been promoting the show. I've been all over Twitter. The reason I'm doing this is because, well, I'll be dead honest with you. I need a job. I need somebody to pay me to do this stuff. And I don't mean necessarily radio, although I would love that. But I want people to know my name. I want people to know my work. I want to be an attractive hire for editors, for program directors, for, you know, whoever. I want my name to be out there. And I have felt recently that I have, when I started, I was not an aggressive self-promoter because I felt like, my altruistic reasons for doing this stuff, of which there are many. I've discussed them on the show many times. It's like, oh, well, you know, if you try and just promote yourself, and I've even been accused of this by a few people, most notably Marty Abernathy, but we won't go there. that I'm a sellout and that all I'm interested in is self-promotion. Da, da, da. And you know what? I'm sorry. I'm not going to apologize for believing in myself and thinking my work is good and wanting to put it out there and wanting to make a living doing what I love. I'm not going to apologize for that. I'm just not. You know, I've been really aggressive with certain editors. I've been, you know, and yeah, I've been, you know, more aggressive, and I will continue to be more aggressive. And if people tell me, hey, Becky, you're getting too annoying, you know, I'll listen. But yeah, I'm trying to put my name out there because I need a job and because this is what I want to do for a living. This is my passion. That's why. And I decided that, well, you know, you don't get if you don't ask. You know what I mean? And I don't think I have been putting enough effort into asking. And so I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to promote myself. I'm trying to create a situation, and I'm being blatantly honest with you guys. I'm trying to create a situation where I email an editor and they know who I am. They know my name. They know my work because it's been around, because people have read it. I hope it's good. I mean, I'm getting statistics on shares and likes and things like Facebook likes and Facebook shares and all that stuff. If I go by that, you guys are reading my stuff, and I love you for it. And, you know, my attitude is I'm saying, you know, hey, look, I can draw readers. I know I can, because here's the proof. I can draw you guys. I mean, do you know, and I'll share this with you, but I normally don't talk about the stats about the show on the show. Our audience on both the live and the podcast has gone up over the last 3 weeks or so by about triple. You guys are freaking amazing. I love you for it. Okay? So you know what? People are paying attention, and I feel like this is the moment. If I want to take advantage of that attention, because I think I'm doing great. I think that the show is great. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to sound like an egotistical jerk, but I think we're doing good radio here. I think we've had some amazing shows over the last few weeks. I've been very proud of the work we've been doing on this show. And I think my op-eds have been pretty good. You know, I feel like I'm doing some of my, and like I said, I don't want to sound like a self-centered jerk, but honestly, I feel like I'm doing some of my best work now. And I feel like this is what I want. Let me show you how good I am so that you will pay me for it. And I know, again, it's self-promotion. It's selfish, maybe. But you know what? That's what you got to do to get a job. That's what you have to do. You have to say, hire me. Because I'm better than the other guy. Hire me because I can give you something that you don't already have. Hire me because I provide a viewpoint that you don't include already, and one that's necessary and wanted and needed. You know, and again, I'm just one of a crowd, of a chorus of voices here. And that's how we all are. But the trick is, if you want to be, you want to do this for a living, you've got to be able to find a way to stand up and say, no, over here, pick me. And that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, I think I'm good enough. I think I can handle the work. I think it's what I want to do with my life. And so, yeah, I'm going for it. And I'm going for it as hard as I can, because if I don't go for it as hard as I can, and you know, then I don't deserve to have it. Then it's going to go to somebody else who works harder than I do. And you know what? That may have been the case in the past, but I've made personal choices and said, you know what? It's not going to be the future. And I'll tell you, and I know this is all, you know, about me, blah, blah, blah. I'm very self-centered, and I apologize for that. But I think it applies to a larger concept here. And follow me here, okay? I think what, in part, is going on with trans women in general is that a lot of us collectively are saying, no, look over here. No, not at RuPaul, not at the drag queens. No, you're talking to us. You need to listen to us too. You can't just say, well, it's okay with RuPaul, so therefore it's okay. It is not. RuPaul's show does not exist in a vacuum. RuPaul has hundreds of thousands of viewers every week. That is an impact. And, you know, you want to call your friends she-male or tranny in the privacy of your own home? Hey, knock yourself out. Not my problem. Not my business. But when you take it on television, then it becomes my business. It becomes your business. It becomes every member of this community's business. And if you don't like that deal, then get off television, asshole. Go back to the clubs and make your money in tips, okay? If you're going to take on the responsibility of being having the cultural impact of a television show, then you have to take on the responsibility too. Sorry, that's the way it works. You don't like it? Get the fuck out of the business. I have no sympathy. You know, go home and roll around in your money a little bit. I really don't care. But do not try to make us the villains here, okay? You fucking rich asshole who's quotes animal. Did you see the Animal Farm quotes? Where he's basically saying, oh, the revolutionaries forgot about the revolution, why the revolution was held, or something like that. Basically, he's saying, well, he's the revolutionary. But he's not. He's old guard. He's the 1990s coming back to haunt us. He's the bigotry of the gay community that we had to fight tooth and nail every single day from even the media, from places that you would think. And like I say, I'm going back to the 90s here. I am not talking about the current version, but we had The Advocate. We had The Washington Blade. Okay. Those of you who remember when it was edited by Chris Crane know what I'm talking about here. Okay. There was a lot of open anti-transgender bigotry in gay and lesbian media. We fought it tooth and nail for decades. And now we've reached the point where, guess what? We are part of the media now. We are the media now. And so now, now we come back into conflict where we say, you know what? We have media voices too now. It's not just The Advocate. It's not just The Washington Blade. It's not just these gay and lesbian only publications. We are included on the blogs. We are in the Huffington Post. We are on The Advocate. We are everywhere. And we are in the media, and we are speaking out in the media. And you know what? The old gay white establishment gay male class doesn't like it very much. They really don't. And, you know, I have to say this, and I'm basing this off a question that I asked the panel last night at Columbia. I'm not so sure, and I don't know, and I really can't speak to this. I'm going to be very cautious as the way I speak to this, because I don't want to offend, and I don't want to speak for anybody who I'm not qualified to speak for here. But I will make an observation. That it seemed to me, when I asked a question about RuPaul and the slurs last night, Janet demurred. She didn't answer the question. Cece McDonald answered it, and she was like, you know, you're fucking up, and stop it, basically, was her response, which was great. But I didn't see a lot of people, you know, it was a lot of times when people would make a comment that a lot of people agree with, they make finger snaps, you know. You know, like that. A lot of people, I didn't hear any finger snaps when I was talking about RuPaul. And that was interesting to me. And I don't know if it was just maybe the crowd. I don't know. But it was a very mixed crowd, very diverse. Probably a majority of the people there were people of color, I would expect. And so I wonder, and again, I am not qualified to judge this in any way. I'm simply asking the question. I wonder how the African-American trans community feels about this. Because I didn't see, you know, I, in fact, I overheard a couple of comments that lead me to believe that a lot of the African-American trans folks believe, oh, this is just a bunch of white trans women making problems. I mean, that wasn't exactly what was said, but that kind of the attitude that seemed to be, you know, oh, it's just those rich white trans women, which, of course, I may be a lot of things. Rich ain't one of them. I can guarantee you that. But there seemed to be a feeling that this was an issue that was all about white people taking on, going after the black person, which I have to say is bullshit. I'm sorry. I would not care. If those words came out of the mouth of a white person, I would be just as quick to call them out. And you know what? I'm sorry. But I don't think race applies in this case. And I'll tell you why. And I'm going to be very quick because we're about to go to break. But the reality is when you do a television show, when you go on the air, you give up that right. You are putting yourself out there. You are making yourself a cultural guide for everybody who is watching your show. And I'm sorry, but that comes with a certain level of responsibility. And whether I'm white or the people who are calling this out are white or black or Chinese or whatever, it doesn't really matter. What matters is the responsibility that you have as a show host when you're performing on a show that has your name on the door. Well, I'm sorry, you know, then you will be held accountable for things that you do on that television show. And I don't care if you're black. I don't care if you're white. I don't care who you are. You don't like that. You don't want that deal. That's perfectly fine. Don't be on television. But if you're going to take on that role, if you're going to accept that status, if you're going to take on that paycheck, if you're going to accept all the perks that come with being a famous television celebrity, then you have to accept the responsibility too. I'm sorry. And if you don't like it, go back to the clubs, RuPaul. Go. God, we won't miss you after a while anyway. There'll be another one to take your place. Just like there always is. You know, your flavor of the moment. People will get tired of you eventually. Just like they did in the 90s. Oh, my goodness. All right. Okay. I said I wasn't going to talk about these issues, but no. All right. Let's go. It's time for our break. We have got always a great band, The Clicks. And this is called Oh Yeah, We'll Cut You Back in Five with Andrea.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Let's get out of here. Look, Emerald City is closer and prettier than ever.
You're out of the woods, you're out of the dark, you're out of the night. Step into the sun, step into the light.
You won.
It's the Rebecca Giroux Show. Thanks for sticking around. And now we have with us Andrea James with Calpurnia Adams. She founded Deep Stealth Productions several years ago and produced the video, I forgot the title, Feminizing Your Voice. Did I screw that up, Andrea?
You did, but that's all right.
Okay. I apologize. But I wanted to I thank you so much for coming on and talking to us, because I wanted to ask, you wrote an article that was in response to, I guess, Calpurnia Adams first wrote an article that complaining about Parker Malloy, who, of course, is the transgender correspondent for The Advocate. She believes she was been misgendered, and that there was a tweet where she said she hated RuPaul. She was called out for that. And you wrote an article and you made some accusations. First thing I would like to ask you is make your case, and why do you feel that Parker was in the wrong here, and why this you believe it was intentional rather than just, well, the errors of somebody who is relatively new to this?
Okay, there's a lot of stuff in that question. So let me sort of back it up a little bit. You know, my piece isn't specifically about any specific journalist. It's about what happened to me when I tried to get an error corrected at the Advocate website, advocate.com, and the problems that I had with their main editor, Lucas Grindley. Mm-hmm. you know, Parker is part of that, obviously. And I think most of the problem falls with Lucas, who I don't think gave her the appropriate training or vetting as a journalist to be doing the kind of work that, that she's doing there. And that was my main complaint and the thrust of my piece.
Okay, well, that's fair. But, I mean, you did make some, for example, and we have a clip, of course, as you know, and as listeners know, I had Parker Malloy on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I interviewed her on some of the stuff that you charged. And the first thing I want to throw out there is this is a clip of Parker responding about that tweet that she hates RuPaul. Mike, can you run that?
You wrote, "I fucking hate RuPaul. Like, there are very few people I truly hate. He is one of them." Now, I want to ask you, looking back on that now, with a little bit of hindsight, I mean, you wrote this a few weeks ago. In hindsight, do you regret posting that?
Absolutely. I mean, I regretted posting that about 10 minutes after I wrote it. But it's just one of those things where it was a day that I was frustrated with, you know, if I remember correctly, that was the day after his show ran that awful female or shemale game or something like that.
So that was Parker's response. I mean, she seems pretty reasonable to me. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, any journalist who says that and then claims to be objectively reporting on someone, you know, that's just completely unprofessional and unethical. And so I wanted to call that out. But also, you know, I just wanted to point out, as I do in the piece, that saying you fucking hate someone is about the worst thing that you can say or feel. And, you know, she may say that she's changed and she's full of love and light now, but I think what's happened is it's like language policing. You just can't use the word hate, but that just drives those feelings underground. You can't just express them with that specific word. And that's one of the things that's going on here, is that, you know, she was either lying when she wrote it or she's lying when she recanted. And I'm guessing the former. You know, I think she's just learned how hypocritical it is to claim you're fighting hatred while claiming you hate people. That may be something she learned.
Well, okay, but let me toss out an alternate theory here, and this is based on my own interaction with Parker. I've had a lot of interaction with her recently, and you know, it seemed to me that the real mistake that she made here was she didn't realize how much baggage the word hate has, especially when you apply it to a fellow LGBT person. That, you know, when you say the word hate, you think about the people who truly do hate us, the religious right, Westboro Baptist Church, people like that. And that this is my theory, that maybe she didn't at the time appreciate the community baggage that word has. Do you think that's fair?
Right. And do you see the parallels with what was going on in RuPaul's Drag Race? That was one of my other main points, is if you're going to say, oh, this was an innocent mistake on her part, then you need to accept that the World of Wonder folks made an innocent mistake as well. They really did not have any idea how offensive this term was. And that was a big mistake on their part. And I think if both of them are going to own up to that and move on and we've got everything resolved, then I think that's great. But there's some underlying issues about how social media gets used. That was also a main thrust of what I was writing. And there's this really toxic little underworld. You know, I've been lying in bed for the last couple of weeks because I had major eye surgery. So I've had time to go on Tumblr and Twitter and all that kind of crap. And these people are really just toxic, and they're all agreeing with each other, and they're just saying hateful, mean things, and they're not being productive. They're just entertaining themselves by being cruel. And, you know, if you want to play that game, I know how to play that game, but it's not really conducive to moving things forward. You know, you have to have dialogues like we're doing right now.
I totally agree with you there. Although I would argue that you can make a fair case that what RuPaul did on his show with refusing to stop using tranny and shemale and even going out of his way to be obnoxious about it, well, that's kind of doing the same thing.
I think you're you're conflating a few things. You know, RuPaul said several things off the show, and there's a difference between RuPaul the person and RuPaul's Drag Race the show. You know, I'm not sure. There may have been some tranny stuff on the show, but you know, my main focus was Gmail, which I think is a very seriously problematic term and something that I've worked for a long time to educate about.
Do you think RuPaul should have stopped using it? Do you think it's appropriate for that word to be used on television?
The term shemale?
Yes.
Absolutely not. You know, as soon as I had a chance, I personally reached out directly to the people involved, expressed my concerns about that segment, the female or shemale segment, and to give them some info on the background of that word. And the reason I was able to do that is because I have those guys on speed dial. You know, it's like I've spent 10 years in LA building relationships and bridges so that when things like that happen, I could reach out and say, hey, you know, this is a problem. You know, I haven't worked personally on RuPaul's Drag Race in any capacity. So, you know, I can't speak specifically to that. But as soon as I heard, I was able to use my connections to talk to them about it.
Well, that's good. And frankly, you know, that's news. I don't think we had heard that you reached out to them, or at least I hadn't read that.
I said that in the article, but I think it got lost in all of the rah, Andrea is a terrible person kind of stuff that was going on social media.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, and this is just personal opinion, that while you were, you know, I still disagreed with stuff that you said. I felt that Calpurnia's article was really, she seemed like she was attacking and demeaning Parker, not because she had as much of had a problem with her personally, but because she was trans media and a trans activist. And, you know, I felt like, well, how can you have a discussion here when this woman is calling us hacktivists and all kinds of other demeaning terms as she complains about, about being demeaned? You know what I'm saying? She's complaining about being demeaned, but yet she's using terms that demean others.
You'll have to have Calpurnia on to talk about her opinions and feelings. You know, we're different people.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I think that one of the other things I wanted to mention is that it's one of the really tough things about the work that I do is that I'm often contractually obligated not to disclose details of what I'm working on. So, you know, I've signed things that will get me in big trouble. So, you know, I had a number of confidential conversations with people at GLAAD and other organizations, and I can't say too much about it, but, you know, this town runs on loyalty and discretion and trust, and those things take time to build and maintain. And in the case of Shemale, I can say that I did as much as I could to educate and negotiate removal of that segment. I didn't get into tranny because that's more complicated, but it's, you know, also I think it's problematic. You know, I don't think either term will be used moving forward on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Well, that's good to hear. Another question I wanted to ask you about was, and this is something that you mentioned in your post. When Parker was on the show a couple of weeks ago, she said she agreed with me that she made a mistake calling Calpurnia a drag queen. I want to run a quick clip and then ask you about it after. Mike, sure. Can you run that one?
You know, I put something in there that wasn't, you know, I said something to the effect of she's a showgirl,
I think you called her, correct me if I'm wrong here, but didn't you, I believe you said you called her a drag queen and she took great offense to that.
Yeah, that was it. So in the piece, I said that and, you know, when I was writing it, I was just trying to come up with a few different terms that I thought she, you know, honestly used to label herself. And, you know, in doing a quick search, you know, online, I mean, that popped up.
Yeah. You know, I think personally, and I've said this publicly, I think Parker should have gotten a citation of Calpurnia's current gender identity. And I think she made a mistake by not doing that. But I also understood why she might have been confused, because there is a lot of information about Calpurnia online that indicates that at one time she did self-define as a drag queen. So can you accept that Parker made an honest error here?
No, I think she was trolling Calpurnia for a number of reasons. And I don't think that was an honest mistake at all. I think she knew what that meant. And you know how you can deal with the slur about Calpurnia being a drag queen. You know how you could avoid that? You just pick up the phone and call her. You know, that's what a journalist would do. It's so lazy to quote someone else's reporting or, you know, to pull a quote from existing material. And most of what I've seen from Malloy is that kind of glorified retweet or Facebook share where you're just regurgitating someone else's work. Real journalists reach out to the people they're contacting, they're covering, and try to make an effort to get their side of things. And I just don't see much of that in any of the LGBT media lately, but especially with theadvocate.com.
Well, I would like to argue that at least some of us try to reach out and get sources, such as this show where we're, you know, you wrote an article, here I am, I'm having you on. And I said on the show last week that the reason why I didn't reach out to Calpurnia is because she seems so aggressive towards trans media and trans activists that I didn't feel it would be worth my time. You seemed like your argument seemed far more reasonable and grounded in factual, you know, facts and beliefs rather than just attacks. And so that's why I reached out to you particularly. And I would like to know, how would you like to see this situation resolved to best effect?
I think it pretty much is resolved in terms of the RuPaul stuff, but there are some much, much larger issues about identity and specifically about this rift between people who were socialized as straight males and people who were socialized as gay males. And this is the big secret that nobody wants to talk about, but that's what's really going on here. You know, like, do you think calling Calpurnia a drag queen is a slur?
I think if it was done intentionally and with malice aforethought to intentionally disparage her, sure. But if somebody looks up a listing on the internet and it says Calpurnia Adams is a drag queen and then goes and innocently says Calpurnia Adams is a drag queen based on this information, and granted, you know, everything you learn on the internet should be taken with a grain of salt, okay? So I definitely agree that you should make a concerted effort to verify someone's gender identity before you go public with it.
Right.
But
like if I found something online that said Rebecca Juro is a crossdresser and I repeated that, would you consider that responsible?
No, I wouldn't. But then the first thing I would do is come out and say, hey, wait a minute, you're wrong. The way you identified me was incorrect. Here's the correct definition.
Well,
but Calpurnia
didn't
do that. She came out with guns blazing and went after Parker.
Well, she did exactly what Parker did. Parker published hers in a you know, venue where a lot of people are going to read it. It wasn't like she said that on Twitter or Facebook. She published it in advocate.com. You know, that's irresponsible journalism. And Calpurnia called her out on her shit, and I did too. And maybe she'll become a better person and a better journalist out of this. But from what I've seen, I don't think that's really going to happen.
Okay, well, all right. What are the lessons that you feel the entire community can learn from this episode?
Well, I think the most important thing is what you're doing right now. You know, this kind of conversation is so important, and reaching out to people, this is the heart of activism, and finding ways to connect that aren't on these corporate-owned social media sites, which don't allow for any kind of, you know, real reasonable discourse. Those things are entertainment, not activism. And we have to find ways that we can connect and reach out to people who have differences and find our common ground so that we can all move forward. You know, I've been painted as some kind of great enemy of freedom or, you know, some sort of terrible person out of this. I don't care. It's like, I'm not in this to be popular. You know, I'm right in this for the goals that are going to help the community. And there's people who want to get power in the community, and there's people who want to get power for the community. And I've always been about for the community. Even though you've said things like that I'm selfish and self-centered and things like that, you know, that's
no,
pretty
I said, wait a minute. I said what you said was selfish and self-centered. That's the difference in calling somebody. You know,
you know
what I said was what was said was selfish
well,
and self-centered.
20 years, you know, I could be living in a mansion on the North Shore of Chicago if I would have stayed in advertising. But I took a 90% pay cut, came out to L.A., and started my career over because I felt like that's what needed to happen when I did that 10 years ago. And
absolutely.
So, you know, all these people who are ragging on me for this and that and think I'm a bad person, that doesn't bother me. It doesn't matter to me. But
yeah. But
I do want to kind of set the record straight that, you know, I've been very clear that Gmail is a big problem. You know, I wrote the Wikipedia article on Gmail. 7 million people have read that article, been educated that is a problematic term. And I fought tooth and nail with people from Toronto's Center for Addiction and Mental Health, who still use that word to this day as a scientific descriptor in academic journals. So this whole thing that I'm like some kind of pro shemale, da da da, whatever, is completely based on these dumbasses on Twitter who don't know what they're talking about, have no sense of trans history, have no sense of what the real community is doing, have no sense what real activists are doing.
Exactly. And I have to tell you, I mean, having been doing this, I mean, I've been doing radio, this show in some form or another, on and off for about 12 years now. And I've been attacked by all kinds of people, trans people, gay people. I want to ask you about this because I'd love to get your take on this. I've yet to see, in all the times that I was attacked and I've seen others attacked, I have never seen the virulence of the way Parker Malloy has been attacked. I don't know if you're familiar with that Drag Race 76 video. I mean, I say to myself, you know, I've been attacked and I've been accused of all kinds of things, but nobody has ever made a comedy film depicting my murder. I think this is going too far.
Well, first of all, I think, you know, I'm unoffendable. I wrote comedy for a long time. I think any kind of satire is fine by me. I think that character seemed to me anyway to be an amalgam of a lot of people. I didn't think it was one specific person, but you know what they say about satire. If you throw a rock into a pack of dogs, the one who yelps is the one you hit. So, you know, I think if you see yourself in a piece of satire, that usually means that you are part of the problem that's being lampooned. So, you know, drag queens are always going to do offensive stuff. You know, that's the whole point of that kind of comedy. And I'm never going to tell a comedian not to do this or that. If they're willing to take the consequences, then it's up to them.
But Andrea, and this is going to, we're almost out of time, but I did want to hit you. You did post on Facebook that you thought that video was hilarious, didn't you?
I still do think it's hilarious. I thought it was
virulently transphobic. It was clearly directed a personal attack at Parker. And, I can't, when trans violence is such an issue and so many trans women are murdered on the streets of this country every day, I cannot find humor in that. I just cannot.
Well, I don't think it was about Parker, and I don't think the kinds of people like Parker are the ones who are getting murdered. You know, the people who are getting murdered are the people who are out there doing their thing. I put a couple of videos on my – I'll put some stuff up that you guys can look at from people who are really out on the streets having the lived experience of what it's like to face violence. You know, it's not happening to people like you and me.
Well, you know what? The truth is, it has happened to me. Okay. I have experienced anti-transgender violence. In fact, I just wrote about it for The Advocate. So, I'm going to have to really strongly disagree with you on this particular point because I'm sorry. I think you cannot be funny about holding something that looks like a gun, having machine gun sound effects, and then have a person with this is one I cannot agree with you on. This was intentional, and it was personal, and it was unworthy.
They let everybody have it in that. They let RuPaul have it. They let all of the people on the show have it. That's what drag queens do. It doesn't bother me. It's like I've heard funny jokes about everything under the sun, and it didn't offend me. You know, as long as a joke is funny. What's that?
But that's you. That's you. You cannot, just like I cannot, speak for the entire community. Do you see what I'm saying?
I'm not trying to speak for the entire community. I just think it's funny. You know, I think everything offensive is funny. And I'm not going to tell people not to do something. You know, if you're offended, that's good. You should let people know. But I was not offended at all. And I laughed at it today when I watched it again.
Well, all right. Well, Andrea, I want to thank you so much for coming on, sharing your views with us. You know, the conversation will continue. And thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye now. Andrea James, who wrote that article about Parker and this whole thing. She Parker is sending me messages on Facebook. She's not very happy. She thinks I softballed her, which I don't think I did. And just to prove that I didn't, okay, I was not going to get into a shouting match with Andrea James on the show. That's not what we do here. I'm not going to do that. I will call her out. I am not going to get into a shouting match. However, now, let's see. It is we have 2 minutes before. Now, I'm going to get into this a little bit more heavily in our second hour. We're 2 minutes before break, okay? But I will tell you right now, what she said about that video, I could not disagree more, okay? And I wasn't going to just attack her because, I'm sorry, you know, I have great respect for Andrea and her place in history, and this is not a personal attack against her, but you know what? I'm sorry. That was bullshit. It was bullshit. That's what it was, okay? It was clearly directed against Parker. It was clearly transphobic. It was clearly a comedy version of anti-transgender violence. Murder. Fucking murder. There is no excuse for comedy killing people. Real people. Personal attacks. This is bullshit. This is over the line. Okay, and you know what? I respect Andrea. I had her on the show. I respect her, the work that she she's done. But I am sorry. You cannot make an excuse for that video. You cannot. Not to this community, not in 2014. It is, I mean, I'm sorry. That sounded like, you know what that sounded like? That sounded like something that I used to hear in like 1997. That's what that sounded like. The same kind of, you know, elitist. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm attacking Andrea, but that last comment about, you know, I mean, we can have differences of opinion. She says, well, Parker, so, you know, she doesn't believe that Parker's motives. Well, all right, that's her opinion. She's entitled to believe whatever she wants. I presented what Parker said on the show a couple of weeks ago. That's about all I can do. Okay. But this, you know, I can say to her, well, you know, on Parker, we agree to disagree. But on this video, no, there is no disagreement. This was intentional. This was personal. This was anti-transgender bigotry. Plain and simple. All right. It is time for our next break. We are going to go to a break. And coming up after the break, we're going to play an interview that I did with Noah Michelson a little bit earlier today. And then we're going to get into all of this. And we're going to be taking your calls on this. So stick around. And for our second hour, we'll catch you in five, gang.
I will not take off my clothes. I will not be rude. For what I have done is come to rock you out here.
Hello and welcome back to RuPaul's Drag Race, season 76. Gentlemen, start your engines and may the best woman win.
Wait a second.
Can I help you?
I don't really appreciate the use of the term gentleman and women used in this context.
Well, honey, you ain't paying my bills, so what you think of me isn't none of my business.
I have a Tumblr with 18 followers.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize.
Tom, we need to take it back. Let's try that one more time, okay? Cisgendered individuals, please start your engines if you are privileged enough to have an engine. And may the best cisgendered individual entertainer win? Is that okay?
I don't really know how I feel about the term win. You know what? This is my motherfucking show, and I'm gonna say whatever the motherfuck I want. Okay? So how do you like this motherfucker? Anybody else got something to say about my goddamn motherfucking show?
Oh.
Okay, I didn't think so. Now let's watch these trash motherfucking fights.
All right, hi, everybody. We are back. It is the Rebecca Giroux Show, and we are talking to the Huffington Post Gay Voices editor-in-chief, Noah Michelson. And we wanted to talk about, there was a video that many people consider transphobic. It depicted anti-transgender violence, a trans woman with a mustache who was obviously supposed to be Parker Malloy, who is, of course, the trans issues correspondent for The Advocate. And Noah, you are the guy who's in charge of the editorial staff that thought that this was appropriate to post on the Huffington Post Gay Voices. And what I'm wondering is, well, I'll just say it like this. What were you guys thinking?
Sure. First, I want to say thank you for having me, Becky. I've wanted to do your show for a while, so this is great. Secondly, over the last month, as you probably know, there's been a lot of discussion around RuPaul's Drag Race, specifically the use of certain terms on that show. And a lot of people have had a lot to say about that language. And it's sort of bled into a larger conversation between trans people, trans activists, drag queens, cisgender people. And there are a lot of different opinions about who gets to use what language and how that works. At Gay Voices, we, I would argue, have more trans content than any other website, LGBT or mainstream. It's a huge part of what we do. It's very important to us. But we're also very interested in having a lot of different voices talking about issues like language and power, identity, privilege. When I saw the video, I did not think that video, I didn't see it in that light. And that was actually misjudgment on my behalf, especially in this current climate. I saw it as a parody and a discussion about language policing, and that's how we approached it. I did not view that person in the video as Parker Malloy, but in retrospect now, I can see, number one, how much that video has hurt a lot of people, and number two, how sort of not helpful that video is to the discussion. So originally it was my intention that would be another viewpoint in the larger discussion that we've been having on the page with lots of people weighing in, including yourself and the great blog that you published a couple days ago. And I thought it was another voice. And I really realized after I talked to some people that I really respect in the trans community, out of the trans community, and they said, you know, this video isn't helpful, and it really goes too far, and I agree. So we took it down.
Okay, and now let me ask you something. Sure. I'll throw this in. I realize I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this question, but I am curious. There have been charges that, and these have not come from me personally, but there have been charges that say, well, the fact that the editorial staff of Gay Voices is all cisgender white guys, you know, people are saying, well, you know, this was bound to happen. Maybe they should get some diversity in there. Do you think that was a factor? That maybe if somebody who was a trans person was on the editorial staff, that maybe you wouldn't have been so fast to post it?
I don't know. I can't speak to that because that's just a hypothetical. I would like to say that our staff does not include just all white gay men. And that's part of the problem, I think, with this entire discussion is that there's a lot of the accusations made about what's going on, and it doesn't look at the reality of what we do on the website or who writes for the website. We have people of color who are on staff. We have queer women who are on staff. And so to just say it's just white cisgender men isn't the reality. Secondly, above and beyond that, we have an incredible group of bloggers who are just as important to the lifeblood of what we do. And a lot of those voices are trans voices. So I understand what you're saying. I understand the accusation that's being made about that, but I don't think it's fair.
Okay, fair enough. Now, let me ask you a question. Going forward, if another video similar to this is found, are you going to handle this differently going forward, do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't run it. You know,
okay. it's well, that's the key point.
Yeah,
and you know, and I want to say, you know, I do apologize that it ran. I do apologize that it hurt people. And I don't think that this is indicative of what our mission is at Gay Voices. And I think that our record really speaks for itself. I think that this was an isolated incident, and I also don't think that the reason we put it up was because we thought, oh, this is a video that is calling for the murder of trans women. I think you would have to think that I was some kind of monster if you thought that's how I was reading that video when I watched it and then said, let's get that up on the site.
Okay,
so,
but let me ask you a question, though.
Go ahead.
But the fact that you didn't perceive it that way, and so many trans people and allies did perceive it that way, does that imply that there needs to be, I don't know, a wider perspective of making these decisions, that somehow this slipped by the editorial staff, that and yet all these people, it created such a strong reaction, and yet not one person on the editorial staff anticipated that?
I also had other trans people who also read it the way that I did and who thought it was a commentary on language policing and who spoke to me about that when I was consulting people about the video. I ultimately felt that it wasn't helpful, like I said, and that opinion, that voice, wasn't one that was actually helping the conversation. So I don't think it was a matter of us just being blind to the needs of the transgender community. I really think it was about us trying to present as many different nuanced voices to this discussion as possible. And that's what we've been doing for the past month. And as I said, I think that this particular video goes too far and is offensive, and I understand that now. But when we put it up, that was not our intention, and that's not the way that we were reading it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, no, I want to thank you for taking the time and coming on. I think this is a really important discussion. I know I'm going to continue participating in it. I hope you and a lot of our other bloggers at Gay Voices will participate in it. And I look forward to seeing what happens next, because this is always, it's all about the discussion. And I think that is a good thing. And I think we've all maybe, it's elevated the discussion, I think, a little, this whole thing. So I want to thank you for coming on.
And for sure. And I want to thank you for being, you know, really reasonable and level-headed and smart and so vocal about these issues, because they're really important and you are a great voice in this fight. So thank you as well.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. All right. So that was Noah Michelson. You know, I respect Noah. I like Noah. I consider him a friend. He's my editor. But, you know, I have to say I'm a little disappointed, because you know what he did was he went for the newly sensitized track. Oh, yeah, we didn't get that, you know, having a fake trans woman in a mustache and blue hair being shot with machine gun sounds would be offensive. What? Yo, that didn't occur to you? That somebody might be offended? You know, especially, I mean, and even if let's forget all the mustache and the blue hair and all that shit. Okay. That whole little scene where they like, oh, I'm upset about side gender privilege, blah, blah, blah. I mean, if there was ever any question that this was virulently transphobic and intended, I mean, you know, there have been arguments that said that this was, I believe this was a personal attack against Parker, but I also believe that it was an attack against all of us who do trans media. All trans women who are activists, who do this kind of work, I think it was an attack on all of us. Parker was mainly the proxy here. And yes, because she was at the center of the storm when this all took place, she has become like a lightning rod for this thing. And frankly, I think that's totally unfair. Okay, because let's be honest, and Parker has admitted this, she admitted this on the show. Yeah, she made a few mistakes. You know, she's relatively new. She doesn't have the lived experience that some of us, my age and Andrea's age and other people, you know. And yeah, she made a couple of errors. Believe me, when I started doing this work, I fucked up all the time. Okay, and I was called out for it, and rightly so. But you learn from it and you move on. And I think it's totally unfair that everybody from Andrea, Calpurnia, and all these people, they're all assuming
They're all of them. All of them are assuming that this was malicious, that she planned this, that she that this was a separatist and an anti-drag agenda and all this crap. And there has not been a shred of evidence to back it up. Not one. Not one. Okay? And that is, I mean, when you call out somebody for doing something that's considered demeaning, and then the way you call them out is by demeaning them, is that supposed to be credible, really? Okay? I mean, you could say, oh, I was defamed because Parker called me a drag queen, so I'm going to call you hacktivists and armchair media people and all this crap, and, you know, and the way she's talked disparagingly about bloggers. And I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but I question the credibility of anyone, and I don't care who it is, trans, non-trans, doesn't matter. I question the credibility of anyone who complains about being demeaned by demeaning someone else. I think that's hypocrisy of the first order. I'm sorry. I just do. I really do. I find it so, you know, I can't help it. I get drawn back to like the late 90s when I was doing this, and I was just starting out. And, well, I wasn't very, you know, I was learning. I was new. I didn't go to journalism school. I didn't get a journalism degree. I did this all myself. You know, and the funny thing is, you know how I started doing this stuff? The way I started doing this stuff was I was insanely bored. I was depressed. I had my, you know, I was felt very alone. I was isolated. And I started getting into the trans media and the LGBT media because I wanted friends. I wanted to reach out. I wanted to know my community. And then I said, I want to do this. Because I found radio hosts like Nancy Nangeroni hosting Gender Talk. I found GayBC, which is the long gone LGBT online radio station. And I said, you know, this is what I want to do. I love this. I want to do this. I want to be a community voice. And that was and it's become my passion over that time. You know, and somebody like Parker, who is doing some terrific work over at The Advocate. I mean, if you haven't read her stuff, in fact, you've probably read her stuff and maybe not even realized it because she's, I mean, I swear she pumps out so many articles. It's insane. I mean, it's like, seems like she's just got something up like every 10 minutes, but I mean, it's all good work. And you know, it doesn't matter. I can tell you this. Okay. Cause I started doing this in 1998. Okay. So no matter what you say, somebody's going to have a problem. The question is not whether somebody's going to have a problem with you. The question is how are you going to handle that problem? Are you going to reach out and say, hey, excuse me, but, you know, you did something that I was really upset about, and I would like to tell you why I'm upset, and I would like you not to do it anymore. Okay? So what I believe, and I've said this from the very beginning, I believe that this should have been approached as an educational opportunity. And I firmly believe, and I bet Parker would back me up on this, okay, that if Calpurnia Adams or Andrea James or one of these people had reached out to her personally and said, hey, you know, you're misgendering me, would you please not do that? I think this would have been handled a lot quicker, a lot more friendly, a lot more cordially than it has been. But I don't see – what I saw was Calpurnia and Andrea James right behind her, with guns blazing, making the assumption that Parker was doing this maliciously, making the assumption that she had some sort of separatist agenda, making the assumption that she is – you know, and you know what? One thing, and I will say this, and I know Parker agrees with me here, one thing she did that did not help her cause was that hate tweet about RuPaul. Okay, that was a mistake. It was a bad idea, and she admits that. She, as she said earlier in that clip, she regretted it about 10 minutes after she posted it. And yeah, that was that kind of thing is that's a newbie mistake, and it was an honest mistake, and it was you know, I mean it's not something I would have done, but that's because I've been doing this for a lot of years and I know better by now. Mark Parker hasn't. And, you know, I think it's unfair to say to someone, you suck, you did this, blah, blah, blah. If you haven't first approached them and say, hey, excuse me, I have a problem here. And then if you don't get success there, such as, to use an example that everyone's familiar with, when we reached out, when GLAAD reached out to RuPaul and said, excuse me, could you stop using these words, please? And they at first agreed, apparently. They said something to Jenny Boylan and then reneged. Well, that's a call to go out and, you know, do something like that. That's a call to action to say, because that's a gigantic fuck you. I don't care. Okay? But that's not what happened here. And I believe that if this had been handled, if somebody had gotten in touch with, for example, Parker or Lucas Grinley, the advocate editor, advocate.com editor, and it said, approached it from the matter of, let's say, you know, excuse me, but, you know, Parker misgendered me. I am upset about that. I would like it corrected. I have a feeling that would have been handled much more differently. But that was not how it was handled. They were demanding the article be taken down and da-da-da-da. And, you know, you know what really frustrates me about this? Is when people in our own community can't give a fellow trans person the benefit of the doubt, at least at first. Nobody is saying that everybody has altruistic motives. Nobody is saying that everyone is correct. Nobody is saying you shouldn't harass this person because they're trans. But at least give the person the benefit of the doubt and say, you know what? Okay, I'm going to go from a position that says I'm not assuming you did this maliciously. I'm going to try and educate you and try and make you understand why this is upsetting to me and ask your help in correcting the problem. And I really believe from the get-go that if Calpurnia and probably Andrea, if they had approached Lucas and they had approached Parker from that perspective, I think this would have been a little minor, little tiff, and it would have just faded away. Because you know what? I can't speak. I've met Lucas a couple of times at events, but I don't know him well. But I've gotten to know Parker a little well. And you know what? I have a feeling she's the kind of person who, if you came to her and said, listen, I have a problem, I don't think she'd be an asshole about it. I really don't. I don't think she's that kind of person. She doesn't reflect that kind of personality to me. And so I place the major blame here on Calpurnia Adams and Andrea James. Because if they, from the start, had reached out as an educational thing, if they had reached out and said, let us tell you why this is a problem for us, I don't think this ever would have become the thing that it is. Okay, now I want to also talk about this video. First of all, I don't know, and I can't tell you if there's any affiliation between Alaska Thunderfuck, who is the entity, I don't know what it is, that produced this video, this Drag Race 76 video, which you heard the tape from on top of the hour. I don't know if they're connected with Drag Race in some way or if it's a private person. I don't know. So I'm not going to go and blame RuPaul for that because, frankly, I have no idea if there's even the slightest connection there. I don't know. I just don't know. So I'm not going to make that accusation. However, these fucking people. I mean, it was disgust. I mean, it was absolutely disgust. I mean, it was revolting. I mean, you know, you see stuff, you see anti-trans stuff appear in the media, and usually you're like, oh, fuck you, asshole. You know, it's like that level. This was revolting. This made me ill. I mean, seriously, this was so blatant and so over the top and so clearly personal and so totally directed at Parker in particular and trans media and activists in general. I mean, so when Noah Michelson tells me that he didn't think it was Parker, well, all right, I can give him that one. But that he didn't think it was directed towards trans women and activists, I have a lot of trouble buying that because you know what? I know Noah too, and he's a pretty smart guy.
I have a strong amount of problems. I have a lot of problems believing that he did not know that this was going to be seen as transphobic. He's too good at his job not to know. And that's the issue I have here. Okay. I think this should have been nipped in the bud. I think this should have never, ever made gay voices. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed about it because I write there. And that's a reflection on me. It's a reflection on Dana Byer. It's a reflection on every trans writer and frankly, every LGBT writer who writes for them. You know, I have a big problem. And again, I alluded to this with Noah. He kind of brushed off the question. But I think that there's a real problem with diversity at the Huffington Post. I really do. I think it's like many other LGBT publications. It's run mainly by not rich, but white cis gay men. I mean, and let's be honest, that's who's running LGBT media. I go to these conventions. I went to the convening. Okay. I mean, you know, yeah, sure. We've got some diversity there, but most of that diversity is among the bloggers and among the writers, the editor staff. It's whiter than driven snow. I mean, really. And it's mostly gay men. And, I think that makes a difference because when you're in an isolated group and you're all the same and all you do is talk to each other, well, it's not surprising that stuff like this is going to slip through the cracks. And I believe absolutely. Okay. And I say this as a former editorial team member for the Bellerico Project. If that had come across my desk and somebody asked me if this was appropriate to post at the Bellerico Project or anywhere else, I would have given a big no. I would be like, you have to be kidding. And so I have to tell you, I have great respect for Noah Michelson. I consider him a friend. But man, I just don't. I find him too tuned in, too smart, and too good at his job not to know that there was going to be backlash from the trans community here. Okay? And the fact that the editor who published it, I don't know if that was Noah or somebody else, called it hilarious. That tells me something about the mindset of that editorial staff. And that, more than anything else, is a problem. If you don't see why that video is a problem, then you are the problem. I'm sorry. Okay. I mean, even if you don't buy that it was Parker that they were attacking there, Even if you believe it's some fictional amalgamated trans woman doing media or an activist, regardless of whether you think it was about Parker or not, it was clearly transphobic, and it should never have run. I have great respect for Noah Michelson. There was one trans blogger earlier today who said that let's see, what was his name? Mitch Kellaway, who is a trans man, wrote a post and Gay Voices published it to their credit, and it's titled "An Open Letter to HuffPost Gay Voices: Why This Trans Man Will No Longer Blog on Your Page." And I will tell you, I have not made that commitment. I feel differently. I feel that this is a problem that needs to be addressed and confronted and solved. And this is my personal belief that I don't get to help do any of those things if I remove myself. Okay? Because it's not going to change one letter of anything that I would write. That's for sure. And we will get into some of what Mitch Kellaway wrote
after we come back from our next break. And it is, we got Laura Jane Grace. This is called Stop. See you in a bit.
Stop, take some time to think, figure out what's important to you. Stop, take some time to think, figure out what's important to you. Stop, take some time to think, figure out what's important to you. Gotta make a serious decision. Stop, take some time to think, figure out what's important. Stop, take some time to think.
Look, Emerald City is closer and prettier than ever.
All right, we are back. It's the Rebecca Giro Show. Thanks for sticking around. And we're talking about this Drag Race 76 video, this horribly awful transphobic video that attacked Parker Malloy and basically trans media and activists in general. I mean, really disgusting, horrible video. There was a lot to post on Gay Voices. One of their editors called it hilarious, which... again, as I said earlier, I think that says something about the mindset of the editors at Gay Voices, and it's not a good thing, you know. And the fact that you know, they're defending this, and the best Noah seemed to be able to do was a "we're newly sensitized" argument. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. Okay, I've been writing for these people for 2 years, okay? I know the diversity of voices that are there. I know the quality of work that's there, okay? I know the quality of the discussions were there, absolutely. I can't buy this "we're newly sensitized" thing. I'm sorry. Noah Michelson is too damn good at his job for that, for me to buy that. I'm sorry. I just can't. And, you know, it's interesting. Parker just messaged me, and she makes a good point. HuffPo, and maybe this is particularly to Gay Voices, I'm not really sure, but they have a rather heavy-handed comment censoring or moderate, we'll use the term moderating, but I think in a lot of cases it's literally censoring. You know, and I find, you know, one of the things I find about the comment moderation over at HuffPo is that it's very inconsistent. I mean, I could post the same comment at two different sections, and one will block me, and the other one will run it. It's hysterical. There's no consistent pattern to the way that they moderate these things. You know, I'll give you a great example. This letter that I was talking about, Mitch Kellaway, I posted a comment there. And basically what it said was, I respect your decision. I respect your reasoning. I don't share it. And, you know, I said, and I'm going to challenge Andrea James and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to take on this topic on the show. Well, it never seemed to get posted. I'm looking, in fact, right now, and it still has not gotten posted. But lots of snarky comments about, you know, from people who you know, support Gay Voices seem to be published. But, you know, this is Mitch Kellaway's post is written as a letter to Gay Voices. I'm going to quote from it a little bit. Because I think he makes some good points. I don't necessarily agree with all of his conclusions, but I think he makes some good points here. And I want to quote a little bit from this. It says, "Dear HuffPost Gay Voices, I can't sit on the sidelines anymore. After I saw you post a parody video, later retracted, in which a trans woman is murdered as a consequence for voicing her objections to offensive language used on RuPaul's Drag Race, I can no longer publish my writing on your page. This letter is my last blog post on gay voices. I continue, so I'll keep reading here. It says, I know. I could have simply stopped hitting the submit button, but I need you to understand where my absence will come from. Seeking viewership through violence directed at trans women, veiled in humor as it may be, means that your page does not get to benefit, among many other things, from the labor or passion of my writing. And while the loss of one blogger may be a drop in the bucket, it's something I know I have to do. I took a deep breath, and I'm ready. Now, let's see. Well, I guess I'll just continue on, because this is good stuff. I don't agree with leaving, because I think when you leave, you take yourself out of the situation. I faced a similar situation like this a few years ago at the Bolerico Project, where we had this post that was really transphobic by this guy named Ron Gold. And a lot of trans people who were writing for us at the time decided to leave the site. And I was pressured to leave the site as well. And I didn't. I didn't, because I felt that if I remove myself from the conversation, the only one I'm hurting is myself, because the conversation is going to continue with me or without me. And if I want to be a part of that conversation, I have to participate. And so I'm not going to do that. I mean, the only way I would consider that was if they did something that was so horrible and so, you know, that I couldn't help. I mean, I believe in fighting to change things. And so I have no intention of leaving Gay Voices. What I am going to do, though, is, I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow or maybe over the weekend, I'm going to write on this. I will voice my opinion. I know no one will publish it. Okay? And so, yeah, I give them credit, because they will publish the opposing view. They will publish stuff that criticizes them. And so you have to give credit for that, because that is not censorship. On the other hand, somebody should kind of pass that message down to their comment moderators. And, you know, I mean, because I think they're squashing comments, at least the ones from me, that are pretty benign. I mean, and it's annoying. Okay. It's really annoying. And so I will criticize them for that. I think they're completely inconsistent. And I don't know why that is. I really don't. Maybe it's because these people are hit and miss, and they just have a group of people that are just, you know, moderating whatever happens to come up first. I don't know if these moderators are specific to different sections on the site. I don't know how this works, but I know that I've written stuff and posted comments that have been pretty aggressive, shall we say, and they've gotten posted no problem. And then I post something that's almost benign, and it gets blocked. And I don't understand. It's like there's no rhyme or reason to the way that they moderate these things. And I think part of the problem is because HuffPo is so huge and has so many different sections and so many people. I think it's like, you know, it's like you get lost in the corporate shuffle. You know, I think that has a lot to do with it. I think this company has grown so huge that it's lost the ability to keep track of itself. And, you know, I'll tell you, I mean, this, you know, when you have operate a business that depends on the goodwill of people donating their work for free, which, by the way, I should add, is another issue. We do a lot of work. I mean, anybody who writes, whether it's an op-ed or a feature article or a book or news blurbs or whatever you're doing, it's work. It's work. It's people. So people are donating work. I mean, and, the way that this is, when you depend on people, you know, and you're making millions of dollars in advertising and all this stuff, and you're not giving so much as a dime to those folks. What you're giving them, what we get as bloggers, as contributors to the Huffington Post or the Bolerico Project or any other place, the way we get paid is in exposure. The deal is We give you our work for free. You publish it. And then we get the attention that hopefully leads to more work and paid work and things like that. They never offer you a dime. Because there's always somebody, just like there's always somebody who's willing to come on television and talk, no matter what they've got to say. There's always somebody who's willing to talk when there's a microphone stuck in their mouth. This is the same kind of thing. Okay, but the reality is that when you stick a microphone in somebody's face, and I'm a little familiar with this, you talk to them for a couple of minutes. Hi, you know, Mr. So-and-so, let me ask you a question. Thank you for your answer. Have a nice day. Okay, takes a few minutes, you're done. Okay, this stuff is work. Okay, it has real value. People pay. People make careers doing this kind of work. We are doing the same work, but we're not making any money, while AOL and Huffington Post gave voice, well, Huffington Post in general, are making millions of dollars, literally millions of dollars. So, frankly, from my position, I think it would be nice if the least you could do is, if you're not going to at least give us a little bit of that profit sharing of those millions and millions of dollars you guys are making on our work, the least you could do is not censor us when we comment at your site so that we can help promote ourselves, which is the payment you are supposed to be giving us. So when I have a comment that is perfectly benign and it gets censored, and what I believe was, why? Because I included a link to the show. Because it was relevant. Because we were going to talk about this very topic tonight. So I said, yeah, you're interested? Tune into the show. Yeah, you bet. I'm self-promoting because that's what I get to do. That's my fee for writing for you. That's my payment, is self-promotion. And when you're now, this is like saying, well, we've been paying you poverty wages and we're going to cut back on that now. Yeah, as a blogger, I have a problem with that. Yeah, a big one. And I think there needs to be, I don't know what the word for it is, a shift, a change in corporate media. I think a lot of these folks, you know, they'll take all the free op-eds you're willing to give them. Believe me, I know, I've written a lot of them. But then when you come and you say, hey, look, you know, I've given you free work. I've shown you I know how to draw readers. I've shown you I know how to do a radio show. I've shown you all these things that I'm skilled. So now I've done my part. I've contributed. I've helped make your business better. I've used my draw to bring readers to your site. Now, how about you do something for me? How about you give me some work that pays me instead of just asking for more free work? And there are some sites that you know going in that are not going to have that. The Bellerico Project. Okay, it's a one-man operation at this point, basically. John Becker, who's the editor-in-chief, is basically, we used to have an editorial team there. He is the editorial team. Okay, there's no funding to pay bloggers. And you know what? I knew that going in. Okay, they're not making the kind of money that they can afford to pay bloggers. So I don't criticize the Bellerico Project for that. But you know what? The Huffington Post, I'm sorry. This is an entity that makes literally millions and millions and millions of dollars every year. I believe it's sold to AOL for something like over $1 billion. Okay, I'm sorry. But when there's that much money floating around, I don't think it's too much to ask. You know, could you throw a few dollars this way to the people who like keep you in business? The people who draw the readers to your site? That you profit from, the people who are generating the profit for your business, do you think you could maybe throw just a little bit back at to honor and respect the work of those of us who do this? Just a little bit. We're not asking for millions of dollars. But you know what? Be nice if, you know, maybe, you know, am I expecting $100 an article? No. But, you know, a few bucks would be nice. I mean, really, I've been doing this for 15 years, okay? And yeah, I've made some money on freelance. I was even a columnist for a year for a newspaper. But, you know, that's relatively little. This show,
I have never made a dime on. Not 1 cent. I would like to. I would like somebody to hire me. I really would. I think I'm good enough. I think I qualify. I think I could do very well in a staff writer position. I think I'm good enough. You know, I mean, if I don't believe in myself, who will, right? So, yeah, I think that part of the problem is that there's been this contract, this unspoken contract between the blogs and the bloggers, which is we will promote you if you give us work for free. Now, I will tell you that there is a big difference, for example, in the way when I write a new op-ed and I issue it to the Huffington Post Gay Voices and the Bellerico Project, there is such a difference in the way it's handled. I usually, when I publish something, I go immediately to the back end of both sites. And so they have my content within 10 minutes of each other. Whatever the new op-ed I've posted, each of them has it ready to go in 10 minutes of each other. Okay. With the Bellerico Project, it gets up real fast. John Becker is on Facebook promoting the hell out of it. And I get shitloads and shitloads of shares and likes. And there's 100+ comments and 1,000 shares and all this. Well, with Huffington, okay, could be a day, could be two, could be three. And then by the time it posts to Huffington, by now, most of the important discussion, the real discussion that was generated by this article has already happened over at the Bellerico Project. And that's where the discussion is taking place. So I'll come back and I'll get like, you know, 7 comments or 12 comments or something like that. And, you know, if they published us quicker and, you know, did a better job of promoting us, you know, I think it wouldn't solve the problem, but it certainly would, how to put this, it certainly would lessen the pain a little bit. Let's put it that way. I mean, you look and it's like they have on the front page of a HuffPost transgender page, they've had the same fucking 3 videos up on top of their page for I don't even know how long. I mean, I don't know. It's like it seems like they never change the pictures. The same picture of Laverne Cox and the same picture of hands next to a prison thing. I mean, it's the same crap. It's like they never. The only thing that changes, it seems like, and this is not true, I'm sure, but it seems like the only thing that changes is the left column where the new columns come. Everything else is like, you know, there's old pictures of RuPaul in a bad wig and you know, 4,000 pictures of Janet Mock and Laverne Cox. And it's like, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like Janet Mock and Laverne Cox. But, you know, maybe you could use that space to promote, you know, other people, you know, people who are not like wealthy authors and actors, you know. Maybe use some of that space where you just have picture after picture of famous celebrities and use that to promote the people who are donating work in order to be promoted by you. I'm sorry, you know, and I don't want to sound ungrateful here because I appreciate the exposure. I like writing for the Huffington Post. I like the status of writing for the Huffington Post. I'm not going to be ashamed of that. But that doesn't mean that I don't think we should be getting a better deal here. If you're not going to give us money, the least you can do is do a better job of promoting us on your own site. I mean, that is what we should be able to expect from you guys, right? I mean, I never see my articles. Let me back that up. I rarely see my articles promoted by the Huffington Post. I mean, yeah, it happens occasionally. But, you know, if it is, it's very brief, you know, and I think they could do a much better job. I think they should treat their bloggers better. They should stop treating us like treating us like we're a part of the Huffington Post, not a UPS driver who drops off free content. Seriously. I actually said that in a tweet the other day.
You know, but that's what it feels like. It feels like you're just the UPS driver dropping off a package, which they can do whatever they want with, and they have no obligation to you afterwards. Well, you know what? I'm sorry. I think they do have an obligation to us, because that's how we get paid. We get paid in promotion. And when you threaten that promotion, when you limit that promotion, I think that's like cutting my salary. And I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair, just like I would bet that the editors at the Huffington Post wouldn't think it was fair if their salaries got cut. I think it sucks. I think it's, you know, again, I am not saying I'm going to leave. I know Mitch Calloway has decided to leave. He's argued about, let me see what he says. Well, he says that there are serious flaws. Yeah, and I've seen, there's been so many times when, like, for example, I remember there was an episode where they, you know how they run those little slideshows? And there was one of these that was beneath a picture of a transphobic greeting card. And what did they put as a slideshow beneath it? All these things having to do with gay marriage. I mean, it's like these people just don't get it. And that's the problem. I don't believe they don't get it. Because I know, I know Manoah Michelson. I know how smart this guy is. I know he gets it. And so either you don't get it or you don't give a shit. And that's where I'm having my problem here. I think that the Huffington Post, in particular, needs to do a better job of taking care of their bloggers. That you should be, one of your primary things should be to promote us, because we make you money. This is how we get paid. And I think it's completely fair to call that out. And if you're not going to pay us in cash, then you need to pay us in promotion. And if you're going to do that, then you need to actually promote us. You can't censor us when we try to promote our shit. You can't limit our ability to self-promote on your site. Because then what you're doing is you're cutting our salary. You're cutting the payment that we get from you. And that's wrong. It's unfair. And just because you can get away with it doesn't mean it's right. I'm getting worked up about this because, well, this is something that I've been simmering about for a while. And I've seen people, in fact, I think it was Parker, as a matter of fact, who called this out recently on Twitter. And she's right. She's right. Bloggers should be paid. Okay? And I know nobody's saying we should make $1 million. But you know what? We should come away with something. Because if you're going to treat us like hired help, if you're going to treat us like the UPS delivery girl, the least you can do is help us out a little bit. Doesn't cost you anything. I mean, and you know what? I think it's a problem because, you know, the Huffington Post is, I mean, it's like writing for the Huffington Post as a contributor is kind of analogous to writing for the New York Times, you know? Yeah, you're on premier feature platform. The difference is that when you write for the New York Times, you get a nice paycheck commensurate with that status. Here, you get nothing. You are expected to donate for free for the sake of promotion. And again, if that's the deal, then you have to hold up your end of the bargain. You have to be able to say, we've done everything we can to promote our bloggers and their work. I don't think that's too much to ask. I think that a multi-million-dollar company, major media company, like AOL, in fact, if you're talking about AOL, we're talking multi-billion-dollar company, I think you can afford it. I think you can afford to take a few bucks and spread them around a little just to say thank you. Thank you for years of free labor that we have profited from. I don't think it's too much to ask. I really don't. You know, I mean, I would like to, you know, and along those lines, we only have a couple minutes left, but along those lines, I think I it's the same deal. Like, for example, when I write an op-ed, like the one I published recently with The Advocate, they don't, and I don't get paid for that. That's a donation. But you know what? The difference there is you're donating, and you know from minute one that, A, this is a one-shot deal. You're not a contributor to The Advocate. You're writing an op-ed, and it's a one-shot deal. You're not a member of the staff. You may be hoping to get some work from them. I certainly am. Someday in the future, I hope. But yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why, and I'll be blatantly honest. I mean, one of the reasons why I wrote that op-ed, besides the fact that I was passionate about the issue and I felt needed to be said and all those writer things that you say. But yeah, I'm stumping for work. I'm hoping, you know, I mean, The Advocate is one company in a much larger company called Hear Media. I'm hoping that there's some work out there, you know, you know, there's a lot of things I can do. Yeah, I want them to think I'm good. I want them to think of me when there's an assignment that may fit my skills. Sure, I do. I also want other people who read that article and may belong to major media or whatever to read my stuff and say, hey, you know, maybe we should give her a job. Okay? Yeah, you bet. You bet. I absolutely donate those kind of articles with the hope of getting noticed and getting attention and acquiring some paid work. I'm not going to apologize for that. It's like anything else, whether you go to apply for a job as a cashier or anything else. I mean, you know, if you're not going to promote yourself, who will? So yeah, it's an exercise in self-promotion. You bet. I want to be successful. I want to make my living doing what I love. And so, yeah, anything that I think is going to give me an inside track to accomplishing that goal, you bet I'm going to take it. I will take it. Why not? Okay? And it's not just about The Advocate. It's about all the, you know, the problem is that there aren't a lot of these companies out there. There's a lot of these big mega conglomerates that own like three or four different LGBT publications. And I'm not even counting, for the most part, the local publications, you know, city-based publications and those kind of things, mainly because in a lot of cases, I don't know about the majority, but in a lot of cases, it seems like the folks at these particular local LGBT media, they've had the same staffers for like 20 years, and they never leave. So it's like, you know, I've been reading the same people at the Washington Blade and the Gay City News and Philadelphia Gay News and places like that. It's the same names. It's been the same names since I came out. Nobody ever leaves. And so there's no work there. You know, I mean, yeah, it's the same principle. Yeah, well, maybe we'll take a free op-ed from you, but don't expect us to actually hire you to do anything. So, yeah, I find it disappointing. Disappointing, bordering on the seriously annoying, that the Huffington Post makes so much money on our work and does so little to promote us and to hold up their end of the bargain. And I think that's a question. I think that's an issue that needs to be explored. And it needs to be questioned. And I think the whole balance of the way that this transaction is run needs to be re-examined. And so that it's a little bit more beneficial to the blogger, to the contributor, to the content creator. Because without us, you ain't got shit. You got nothing. You got blank pages. That's what you got. So I fully believe that this is an issue we need to talk about. But that will be another show because we are out of time. I want to say thank you to Andrea Dames for coming on, talking to us. I want to say thank you to Noah Michelson for coming on. I want to say thank you, as always, to the amazing Mr. Mike Scott for twirling my knob so I can push your buttons. And we will repeat the entire show in about 3 minutes. So if you haven't heard it, missed anything, stick around for that. We will catch you next week with Diego Sanchez. Have a good night, everybody.
Some little goodies from the bar. You won.